Hi, this is Joe Patti. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Probably some of the greatest composers' works for solo instruments have been inspired by the finest artists in musical history. And so it may be safe to assume that certain artists of today have felt impelled to unearth repertoire that may have remained undiscovered. That is the case with violin virtuoso Rachel Barton Pine, our guest today, who not only has received critical acclaim for her playing, but is passionate about bringing to light such long-lost masterworks. Ms. Pine's latest recording of Franz Clement's Violin Concerto in D Major from 1805 gives new insights into Beethoven's Violin Concerto in D Major from 1806. Ms. Pine has written her own cadenzas for the work, and we speak with her about the entire experience. Welcome, Rachel Barton Pine, to Crossover.
Great to be here.
And you have a very exciting thing that has happened to you, amongst exciting things that you do. This is really quite something, this recording that you have made of this concerto by Franz Clement. He was a violinist, wasn't he?
Yes, Clement was a violinist in Austria during the classical period, and he was actually the dedicatee of Beethoven's violin concerto. In other words, Beethoven wrote his violin concerto for Clement to perform, but Clement was also a bit of a composer himself and wrote his own violin concerto 1 year before Beethoven's for the same annual benefit concert of the orchestra where Clement was concertmaster in Vienna. And it's in the same key, the same length, the same instrumentation, the same musical aesthetic, and many of the exact same figurations as Beethoven's concerto. So it's kind of astonishing to realize that Beethoven's masterpiece has this predecessor, which obviously was so influential on it and which has been lost for 200 years.
I just was going to ask you, this is newly found, is that right? How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, its existence was sort of vaguely known about by the musicological community, but musicologist Clive Brown just published a modern edition, a modern print of the score, and that was, just a couple of years ago when that came on the market. And, before then, the only edition you could get was the one from 1805, which didn't even have a conductor's score to go with. So nobody had played it for all those years.
Had you had this in mind? I mean, was this something that you were looking for, a new work, a new work, whether it be an ancient work or a newly found work or a newly edited work? Was this on your agenda?
Well, it's always been a great passion of mine to, play music from all eras, from the Baroque to composers of today and, from the most famous beloved classical works, to things which have been unjustifiably neglected. I love digging up obscure, wonderful things from the past and sort of reintroducing them to the public. That's always fun to be a bit of a musical archaeologist like that. And the Beethoven Concerto, of course, is one of the most famous violin concertos.
Yes.
Ever and something, very close to my heart for many years. And I've always dreamed of recording it and, planned to record it, but I wanted to find the perfect thing to pair it with.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to just, do it with Mendelssohn or, something obvious like that, that didn't really have such a strong, artistic connection, to Beethoven's great piece. So I'd sort of played around in my mind with what might go with it. And there were a number of concertos written at the time of Beethoven, but they were mostly by guys from the French violin school.
Okay.
Viotti and Rodet, Kreutzer, and, the aesthetic of that group of violinist composers was very different from what Beethoven did in his concerto. The French guys were all about, having a very rich, lush tone and, sort of having the violin play all of the melodies and have a lot of show-off kind of virtuosic passages that were there just to highlight the violinist this brilliance. And, you know, Beethoven's concerto holds such a special place in the repertoire because it's conceived along very symphonic lines, where the orchestra plays a lot of the melodies with the violin soloist playing descant, which is integrated in a very chamber music-like way into the texture as a whole. And so I felt like, you know, it might be kind of interesting to do a French concerto and show how different it was than Beethoven, but I just wasn't convinced. And then when Clement's concerto came along and it turned out to be the exact same concept as what Beethoven was doing, not to mention a gorgeous piece in its own right, then I was just like, all right, this is it. This is the pairing I've been looking for. And luckily it all worked out and I got to do
it. Of course, this is a world premiere recording, absolutely, isn't it? Nobody's done it before. And you have written the cadenzas for both of the concerti on this recording, which was a very ambitious thing. What I guess violinists, when you reach a certain point in your career, you feel that perhaps you can contribute something as an artist, knowing the instrument as you do, in perhaps a more, I don't know, modern or up-to-date version of cadenza. But I guess you really reach that point where you say, maybe I can do something with this that would be unique. And is that what happened with you?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, some violinists like to play their own cadenzas, and some prefer to play cadenzas from great artists of the past, whether it's Kreisler or Joachim or any of those guys from the 19th century. Mm-hmm. And both are, you know, certainly artistically valid approaches. But I've been writing my own cadenzas since I was a teenager, and it really actually came about when I started playing unusual concertos that, you know, basically obscure pieces that didn't have cadenzas that had been left to us written by the great artists of the past. So I had no choice to write my own. And I discovered that not only was it just really fun to be creative like that, but also that somehow or another, it was the most personal way that I could express the way that I felt about each piece. You know, it's, you know, basically, I'm not Joachim or Kreisler. I'm not interpreting, you know, Beethoven's music or Mozart or, you know, or Brahms the way that those guys played those concertos. And so, therefore, the most organic way that I can integrate the cadenza with my interpretation is to do my own cadenza. So it's really about, you know, just having a personal statement about the piece. And, you know, I think it's something, you know, perhaps a little bit fun and fresh for the audience who are probably used to the commonly played cadenzas to hear something different.
Well, did it take you a long time to do that?
Well, you know, that depends on how you look at it. Sometimes, you know, thinking about writing a cadenza for something like the Beethoven concerto can be a little intimidating. As much as I want to do it, there's always a period of procrastination. And so there's, you know, X number of days or weeks when I think about doing it before I actually sit down and do it. But then once I finally decide, okay, I'm going to write it and this is that. So, you know, then at that point, you know, usually an afternoon, a day, to get the bulk of it composed, and then I might continue to refine it, you know, with each performance. Even.
Well, I would think it would be a little daunting to compare yourself to someone like Beethoven in the sense that you would include your own creation within his great work. Of course, I guess you have to reach a point where you say, I have something to say, too. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I guess I just don't look at it that way because, you know, ultimately, you know, with all of the weight of history and tradition, you know, you also have to have enough confidence in yourself to go and perform these pieces. And you can't be intimidated by the fact that Oistrakh and Milstein and Heifetz and all of these guys have played these pieces before
you
as an interpreter.
Well, not that is so much. Yeah, it's more than the composer I'm talking about, rather.
Yeah, well, my point is that it's the same attitude that you have to take when you compose as when you interpret, that, you know, in this moment, you know, this doesn't matter what's going on before, but this music is something that I have a relationship with and that I love and that I'm really excited to share with listeners, and I'm just going to go for it. And you just have to trust that, you know, trust your instincts that, you know, the music is going to flow and that, you know, something worthy is going to come out, and, you know, and just have fun with it, really.
Now, you are an established virtuoso. Can you tell our listening audience a little bit about your background? How old you were? You started very young to play the violin, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not that uncommon these days to start at the age of three, but that is when I first started taking lessons. Mm-hmm. Just with a local teacher in my neighborhood, I had seen some girls playing violin in my church and just was really intrigued by their beautiful long dresses and the sound of the instrument, and I asked for one myself. And so there was just a teacher a few blocks down the street one summer, that summer when I was 3 years old, and just started lessons very innocently, and my parents were kind of shocked by how obsessed with it I became.
Really?
And all I wanted to do was play the violin all day, and ultimately started homeschooling, which allowed me to have more freedom of flexible schedule to do all the practicing I needed to do. I made my debut as soloist with orchestra when I was 7 and had my first, really major concert when I was 10, soloing with Eric Leinsdorf and the Chicago Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And then went on to do, the international competitions when I was a teenager.
Yes, and
started recording, and rest is history.
Yes. Well, you made history along the way, and this is yet again another piece of history, a premiere recording with your own cadenzas, and we really look forward to putting that in our regular database because we're always looking for exciting new things here at the station. And
terrific. Well, I should say one quick thing about my first movement cadenza in the Beethoven Concerto, which is really cool. See, Beethoven didn't, of course, leave any cadenzas that he himself had written for his violin concerto. He left that up to each violinist, to play their own or to play that of another violinist. But he transcribed his violin concerto for piano somewhere along the line. And when he did that piano arrangement of it, he did write his own cadenzas. And what's interesting is the way that his cadenza starts to the first movement of his piano concerto version of the violin concerto is very different than the way most people start their violin concerto cadenzas. Usually those broken octaves that begin the opening solo statement, mm-hmm. People will often do an extrapolation of that, or perhaps of some other material that the violinist played. But in fact, what Beethoven uses is a motive from the tutti section, which the soloist never even played. So it's really a really exciting, blasty kind of place, very energetic and full voiced. And so I actually start my violin cadenza that way, just like Beethoven did in his piano version.
Looking to Beethoven's creativity, I think he was always one to push the envelope, as we say. Beethoven, he really was very highly creative, and of course, that's unique of you to take his lead in order to do that. So, this is the first release of this, and have you performed this yet in a public concert?
Well, the Beethoven, of course, I've been soloing with orchestras for, a couple of decades now. The Clement, I am still waiting for somebody to, take the plunge. It's not an easy piece to get programmed only because, like Beethoven's concerto, it's also on the longer side. And so it, is suitable maybe even as a second half type of a piece. And the fact that, I think it's, a gorgeous composition and that anybody who hears it is going to absolutely fall in love with it, but yet people don't know of it. So, it's not an easy thing for orchestras to sell tickets to because people aren't going to want to come to the concert to say, oh, the Clement, I want to go hear that. I would have to, it would maybe have to be an orchestra that's more adventurous in their programming or maybe a town that already knows me as an artist where they're going to come regardless of what I'm playing. But I'm very hopeful that, I'll start to perform it more and more, and perhaps even some of my colleagues will take it up and start to perform it. Certainly the Joseph Joachim Concerto, the predecessor of Brahms's concerto that I paired on album a few years back, I have indeed performed the Joachim on a number of occasions since that album came out. So I have high hopes for the Clement, and I'm really looking forward to sharing it with people in concert.
Well, I think whenever you bring something new into the repertoire, I guess the scholars and then, of course, the artists that play the works are curious. That's the first thing. And then when they attempt it, it will find its way, hopefully, into more performance. I think that's always a problem, no matter what you're playing, especially these days with programming for orchestras. Are you going to be touring at all?
Oh, well, I'm constantly on the road. In fact, I just flew back from Iceland, Scotland, and Maryland last night. And in a few days, I go off to Indianapolis, Philadelphia, London to make my London debut with the Royal Philharmonic.
Oh,
and
that's
then
wonderful.
Back to Kentucky, and then I can't even remember after that. But my whole tour schedule is on my website at rachelbartonpine.com, where you can also find links to my YouTube channel with all my videos and my MySpace page and my podcasts and my blog and all kinds of good stuff.
Well, you're totally independent. That's marvelous. And when will you be coming to Philadelphia?
Ah, that's a great question. I don't think I'm going to be there this season, but I know I certainly have visited Philadelphia a number of times over the years, and look forward to coming back again whenever that might be.
Well, hopefully we'll see you sooner than later. And thank you so much for taking time from your very, very busy schedule to speak with us here on the station. And thanks again, Rachel.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.